May it please the court. Good afternoon, Your Honors. My name is Brett Lampiazzi. I represent William Hoover. My registration number out here in Colorado is 39317. Your Honors, an error becomes a mistake when we refuse to correct it. When it imposed this century-long sentence on Mr. Hoover, the trial court in this case admitted that it utilized somewhat arbitrary method. On resentencing, the trial court repeated that same method. That resulted in a defective proceeding, as the case law says. That sort of defective proceeding, or defective sentencing hearing, if you will, is reviewable by this Court of Appeals.
Wasn't that already reviewed and decided in the direct appeal? If what you're challenging is the underlying philosophy of what the court did in the original sentencing, hasn't that already been decided as a matter of law?
No, Your Honor, I don't believe that it has. What was decided on the direct appeal was that the intrinsic fairness of the sentence was within the trial court's realm and should not have been reviewed or was not in front of the court on the first appeal. What Mr. Hoover is challenging on this appeal is, upon resentencing, a lack of affirmative discretion over relevant and mitigating factors. And not only that, Your Honor, but Mr. Hoover is also challenging the court's sentencing scheme itself. The court admitted in paragraph 5 of the November 13th, 2008 order that at original sentencing, in this case, the court did not set out to give Mr. Hoover a predetermined number of years. The court admits that when it sentenced Mr. Hoover to this, for these white-collar crimes, these nonviolent crimes, that she didn't know how many years he would spend behind bars. That was a fact that was not before the court on Mr. Hoover's direct appeal. I'd like to talk about why it's relevant here today.
Okay, go ahead.
The reason that's relevant here today is because, in so admitting, the court says that she was concerned about the defendant's actions on each individual victim. And because of her concerns about the individual impact of Mr. Hoover's actions, she decided that each victim would receive a certain amount of time to be run consecutively with one another, a variable pound of flesh, if you will. What the court doesn't do in utilizing that scheme and repeating that scheme on resentencing, where the court says that it would stick to its original rationale, is make any comparison or contrast between how each of these individual victims may or may not have been affected by Mr. Hoover's overall actions.
Stop you there and question your premise a little bit, because implicit in your argument is that this is somehow the individual sentences for each of these counts is something that each victim receives. But in fact, it's really what the defendant receives for his conduct vis-a-vis each individual victim, right? In other words, each victim is not awarded a certain number of years. It's not a pound of flesh to each victim. It's the number of years that the defendant has to serve because he stole from each of these victims.
I understand. I believe I understand your question. My response is that a court has an obligation to understand in aggregate how many years?
That's precisely where I was headed, because I want to question that premise. What's wrong with determining that each of these thefts, being of such and such a nature, that they each warrant a certain amount of time without having a preconceived idea about where that's going to take us? I mean, I presume you wouldn't be startled to realize that a court would say, well, I think this count deserves a presumptive range sentence of this, and this count preserves a presumptive range of that, and that takes us, say, to 16 or 17 years. That's the consequence of this determination. We wouldn't be thinking, well, that's an error because you didn't have 17 years in mind when you started out. So why is that different here?
Mr. Hoover's not necessarily attacking the end result. He's not permitted in this type of an appeal to attack the fairness of the overall aggregate result. The court here needs to be sensitive to the fact that the reason a trial court needs to understand where they're headed with the discretionary consecutive scheme, because this crime is unfortunately a popular one these days. It's a scheme. Mr. Hoover, a trial court has a basic duty. Their first basic duty, I would humbly say, is to do a basic analysis of what an aggregate sentence is going to look like when compared to the white-collar criminal down the block, or when compared to the dozens of other white-collar criminals, offenders, white-collar securities fraud folks who are committing like crimes.
That's a proportionality review, and that's not in front of us, is it?
I don't consider that a proportionality review, and here's why. What we didn't know at original sentencing was that the court didn't know how many years Mr. Hoover, for this scheme, would spend in jail.
Let me stop you right there, because what the court says in its 35B order is it didn't set out to impose a predetermined aggregate. But where is there anywhere on the record or an admission that the court, by the time she sentenced Mr. Hoover, didn't know exactly what she was doing? She knew she was imposing 100 years. Is there any doubt about that?
Again, what's being attacked on this appeal is a scheme that results in an enormous number of years in the white-collar criminal realm. The trial court had an obligation to make an initial analysis that would go something like, okay, in this financial fraud case, I have 50 victims. And I want to, as she says, consider the individual impact of each and every one of these victims.
Saying she has to individualize a sentence on each count depending on some circumstance about the victim of that count. That's what you're telling us, right?
I may be not being articulate about my argument. What I'm trying to get across is that the trial court does not distinguish between each individual victim and each individual count.
What you're saying, she should have individualized the sentence for each individual victim who was connected with the two counts, of course, that he was sentenced on.
What I'm saying is, in this particular type of offense.
But if you're right about that, she could. I mean, here she imposed the minimum sentences for all of them, right? What if she had imposed the minimum sentences on half of them and the maximum sentences on the other half? That would have gotten her to a figure greater than 100 years. Would that have been okay?
Yeah, it's a basic tenet of the criminal justice system that in a nonviolent, and I don't want to minimize the effect on the victims, but property crime, that an individual is presumed not to spend the rest of their life in jail.
What case says that?
No, that's not in the opening brief. That's my own review of the Supreme Court, the United States Supreme Court's decisions with respect to cruel and unusual punishment. I'd be happy to submit a supplemental brief on that. This was pro se. again, this is this ultimately the trial court judge bases the sentencing decision on individual victims. So in a Bernie Madoff case, which is also a Ponzi scheme securities fraud case, if Mr. Madoff came before the trial court judge, he would do an upwards of 10 million years based on the number of solely based on the number of victims. So by not discriminating between each victim and finding that a particular sentence was appropriate and then arbitrarily running those sentences consecutively, we have a result where the actual process is flawed in these types of cases.
What factors should the court have taken into account with respect to the individual victims? The amount of money taken, the age of the victim, the impact it had on them, the ability of them to recoup their losses, all those kinds of things?
Your Honor, the federal guidelines are instructive on this point, and they're not instructive, but in
but they're not applicable to our state court. Yeah.
Well, if the federal guidelines aren't applicable, we can look only to the cases that come out almost on a daily basis, and down the block, a Mr. Merriman who just plea bargained for 40 years, having stolen $60 million. In a case with dozens of victims. If Mr. Merriman went in front of Judge Rappaport, he would have received a sentence in the hundreds of years range. Unfortunately, Your Honor, the trial court doesn't make a sufficient record to tell us why each and every one of these victims should be treated alike. Is the gentleman who lost $750,000 the same as the individual that lost $20,000? And so the judge, upon resentencing, does have an obligation to look around in other financial fraud type cases, perhaps to the instructive federal guidelines, and understand that these cases are largely based on the number of victims times the amount of money stolen.
So you're asking us to sort of imply the sentencing guidelines into this case, aren't you?
No, I'm not. What I'm asking is that the court remand this case so that an aberrational 50-year sentence for someone who stole $13 million, a sentence that by all accounts, objective or otherwise, is a black eye on Denver, Colorado for how severe it is in the financial fraud realm, to go back to an independent objective judge for an analysis of, for a reanalysis of, with that amount of money stolen, what is a more realistic sentence.
I'd like to, compared to what other defendants have received, like Mr. Merriman, as you mentioned?
And that gets to another point.
Isn't that proportionality, which is what Judge Gorsuch suggested?
When this case went back for resentencing, there were several mitigating factors in front of the court, including the fact that many victims had gotten their money back. The court simply doesn't make a determination between how much money Mr. Smith got back versus how much money Mr. Jones got back. These are facts that not only does Mr. Hoover deserve to know, but I would suggest the Court of Appeals would probably like to know. The trial court simply doesn't provide that information to help us understand whether the money recouped was a mitigating factor in and of itself. I'd like to, I suppose,
about a half a minute,
30
left.
Seconds.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. May it please the court. My name is Catherine Hansen, registration number 25464, appearing on behalf of the people in this matter. The only issue before this court is whether the trial court exercised any discretion in this case. If you look at the comments by the court at the reconsideration hearing and look at the court's lengthy order, it's clear it considered lots of factors, properly exercises discretion, and there should be no question that it did in fact exercise its discretion. That's the only issue before this court, and we would ask that this court affirm. I don't have anything further. If this court has any questions, I'm happy to.
I just have one. I'm just curious here. The court reduced the overall length of each sentence from 4 years to two.
Correct.
And that effectively halved defendant's sentence.
Correct.
Does the 2 years represent the minimum presumptive range sentence for each of these counts?
I believe it may have gone into the extraordinary minimum. I mean, gone below.
So that any individualized consideration, sort of any individualized consideration per victim, could only have yielded an increase.
Likely.
I mean, because there's no floor under which to go as
right.
to each of these counts, at least if it's the minimum mitigated range sentence.
Correct. And those are proper factors for the trial court to consider.
Sure.
But in this appeal, it's whether the court did exercise its discretion. And I think the order shows, as we've probably seen in many cases, it's quite detailed and more thorough than most 35B orders. I'm happy to answer any other questions. Thank you very much.
Brian Piazza, we came at you pretty hard with a lot of questions. I'm going to ask the bailiff to add another couple minutes to your rebuttal if you want to use it.
I
The trial court had discretion. That's not up for argument here today, but discretion must be suitably directed and limited to minimize the risk of wholly arbitrary and capricious results. An example that the trial court judge acted arbitrarily here is that she specifically found Mr. Hoover to be rehabilitated. He was rehabilitated. And then, after finding him rehabilitated, sentenced him to what amounts to two more life imprisonments for a guy this age. One of the major policy considerations in sending someone off to jail for an extended period of incarceration is so, one, the public is safe in the arena of a violent offender, and two, to rehabilitate that individual. Mr. Hoover put several alternatives to incarceration at a level 4 maximum security facility in front of the trial court judge. She had an obligation under SPAN to exercise affirmative discretion over that factor, to consider that alongside retribution. She didn't mention that.
Didn't she say she took into account that all the evidence that had been put forward about both rehabilitation and his remorsefulness?
She did say that. She said that he was rehabilitated, which, under our system of justice, as I understand it, would give him an opportunity to be in a probationary setting or at least a minimum restrictive setting.
Was the judge obligated to do that, or was she just supposed to exercise her discretion, weighing all those factors, and come out the way she did?
Well, again, there's no question that the judge had discretion to weigh the factors. I would suggest that the two lifetime imprisonment sentences can't be squared with the finding that this man's rehabilitated. The court had an obligation to take into account whether or not on resentencing, Mr. Hoover's 50-year sentence was not an aberration, and it still is an aberration, and that's the People versus Smith case. That in the end, I want to make sure that each individual victim is recognized by my sentence, but at the same time, understanding the overall aggregate effect of that sentence on the individual.
Mr. Lampies.
Thank you.
I thank you to both counsel for your arguments. Case will stand submitted, and we will issue an opinion in due course.